and drops down Interstate 57 to about Paxton. Back behind it, from east of Pontiac, a line goes to the southwest all the way down to about Decatur right now. And it is moving to the east very rapidly at 50 miles an hour. You can hear the static in our signal, and at times, because of the electricity, we're being put off the air. But we'll continue to monitor the situation. The best word is that if you live basically along Interstate 57 or just to the west of it, and certainly to the east of it, you should be aware that these severe thunderstorms have been popping up in this line and moving to the east very rapidly. They have caused some damage in the form of tree limbs down in the city of Paxton, and high winds tree limbs down in Seymour. That's to the west of Champaign, and also the Rantoul Airport reporting a 58-mile-an-hour wind gust. Some hail has been reported with this storm. If you're in its path, and that would basically mean if you're in Champaign or Piatt, Vermilion counties, Ford, Iroquois, Livingston, and far eastern Iroquois County, you should be prepared for this kind of weather to move through your area, and you should be taking the proper precautions. You should be inside in a safe place. This is WILL Urbana. It's 1.5 minutes past 5 o'clock.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Tim Stromer. We're talking to him by phone. Are you in Minneapolis, Tim? Tim, are you there? Yes, can you hear me? Tim Stromer.
I can hear you.
Ah, great. Now we can hear you. Wonderful. You're in Minneapolis?
I'm actually about 80 miles south in a little tiny town in southern Minnesota called Good Thunder.
Well, that's not a good word to use today in our area. Here in central Illinois and Indiana, we're having thunderstorms, so we may be interrupted with more emergency weather information. But we'll be talking today with Tim about Kids Against Hunger. Tim, there's a world food crisis going on now, but Kids Against Hunger has been going on for a while. Tell us how it got started.
You bet. There was a man named Richard Proudfoot who was actually into the plastics industry, injection mold and rubber plastics, and he decided to take a working vacation on a missions trip down in Honduras in 1974 after a hurricane had swept through there and caused much devastation to a third world country. And when he was down there, he saw, literally for the first time in his life, starving kids. And it just kind of broke his heart, and it, you know, he just didn't really know what to do with it. And as far as keeping the faith, he was not a religious man in any way. He was not a Christian, not anything. But when he was down there, he heard a very interesting thing, and it was a very loud voice. It was an audible voice, and it said, "Feed my starving children." And so Richard wasn't sure what to do with that, and he actually thought he was kind of going batty for about a year. He just plagued him, and he couldn't get rid of it. It actually kind of reminds me of the story of the Amazing Grace movie, of just being plagued with something and just not really sure what you can do about it. And so what he started doing was he started sending cakes and buns and granola bars eventually, and eventually came to terms with his faith and believed that that was actually God speaking to him. But the first trials, he feels like, were truly a failure, because when a person starts to starve, they start to become malnourished, their bodies start to break down, and cakes, buns, granola bars, filler foods aren't really meant to rebuild the body. And so he actually ended up teaming up with some food scientists from very large food companies, and they helped him develop a massively nutritious meal, and then they started making it a few years later. And so over 20 years now, we've been sending these meals all over the world and in this country, too, feeding starving kids. It's been a very sweet thing to be able to do.
Now, you're the director of Kids Against Hunger. How long have you been in that position?
I've actually been a director here at Kids for almost 3 years now. I've been with the organization for almost four, and I started out just as a volunteer. What happens is basically people come into these places called Kids Against Hunger, and they make food for us. And what I did was is I went up with a youth group, to Minneapolis area, and we packaged food, and the kids, we also went to, it was a whole retreat weekend thing, and we went to Mall of America and Camp Snoopy and went to a Christian rock concert the night before and just had a boatload of fun. But the thing that the kids loved the most was actually packing food for starving kids. And I think there's something in a lot of us that knows there's a need out there, but normally speaking, there's not something you can hands-on do about it. You know, I mean, unless you take some Big Macs or something over to a third world country, which probably wouldn't be very good for the kids anyway, there's just not much you can do about it. So it's kind of neat. You know, we fell in love with it, and we said we wanted to bring it to our city, to Mankato, actually, which is just south of us. And Richard,
Tim, we're going to have to interrupt. Oh, sure. I'm sorry. We do have a weather announcement. We'll be back with you in just a minute.
And from WILL, we have a new severe thunderstorm warning in effect for eastern Champaign County and also for Vermilion County until 5:45. National Weather Service meteorologists detected a line of severe thunderstorms capable of producing quarter-size hail and destructive winds in excess of 70 miles an hour. These storms are located along a line extending from 5 miles north of Gifford to 3 miles west of Pisotum. Make that 3 miles west of St. Joseph and then down to Pisotum. A very fast-moving storm system to the east of 45 miles an hour. Ogden, Homer, Rankin, Potomac, Fithian, Broadlands, Oakland, and Fairmont are in the path of this storm, along with Catlin, Danville, Georgetown, Hoopston, Philo, Ridge Farm, Rossville, Sidell, Sidney, Tilton, and Westville. If you're in the path of this storm, you should prepare immediately for damaging winds, large hail, and deadly cloud-to-ground lightning. If you're outside, you should move to a shelter indoors away from windows. The severe thunderstorm warning that had been in effect for southeastern Livingston and eastern Ford counties has been canceled, as has the warning for east central Iroquois County. That has now been canceled as well. So we have a severe thunderstorm warning in effect for parts of Piatt County until 5:15, and other parts of Iroquois County till 5:30, and parts of Champaign and Vermilion counties now until 5:45.
Thank you, Jay Pierce. Let's get back to our guest on Keeping the Faith, Tim Stromer from Kids Against Hunger. Tim, you were telling us about your youth group that was packing food for starving kids through this program, and that they really appreciated being able to do something practical. Tell us what's involved in that, because I know that's a central part to what Kids Against Hunger does.
You bet. What normally happens is a youth group or Boy Scout troop or, you know, retirees or, you know, whatever type of group you might have, they usually call a center that's located by them. We actually are in about 17, 18 different states now. There's about 40 different locations. You can go on our website and see the different locations. But basically what they do is they call up and they try to get a time, you know, when they can pack. And then they try to fundraise to help cover the cost of the rice and the soy and the different ingredients they're going to make. And then they come in and they usually pack for about 2 hours. And each person in that two-hour period is literally going to be able to make enough food to feed a starving kid for a year. So you'll walk away feeling very satisfied, and it's a very sweet thing to be able to do.
Give us your website.
Oh, sure. It's kidsagainsthunger.com.
When you get a group of people together who are doing this, tell us about the materials they're working with. You mentioned rice. What else?
You bet. The ingredients, again, it was formulated by food scientists over a period of about 3 years. And the goal of it was to basically make a massively nutritious meal, because a lot of kids get one meal a day. Or if you live in a refugee camp, you might only get fed every 3 or 4 days. So the main staple is beans and rice, but that's not enough nutrition for the entire day, let alone every 3 or 4 days. So what they did was they start out with rice because it's the best filler, it's inexpensive, it does have vitamins and minerals, good fiber. And then they came up with protein, which is soy. And soy just has massive protein. 1 pound of the soy we use is equivalent to 8 to 12 pounds of red meat for protein, so massive protein. Another 9 vitamins and minerals in the soy. And it's got chicken flavoring, which has no real chicken in it, so we can feed vegetarian meals too. That's got 21 vitamins and minerals, very, very powerful stuff. And then 6 different vegetables. So they're each in 4 different tubs, and what happens is an empty bag comes under the funnel, and the 4 different ingredients get scooped in by volunteers, and then it's weighed and sealed. and then it's packed into a box, and every box that's packed will feed 216 kids. So a lot of people can do a lot of good in a very little time.
When this first began, you mentioned that Richard Proudfit was a manufacturer working in plastics, and he had this experience that you described earlier where he felt he heard this voice that said, "Feed my starving children." What kind of a person is he? He's gotten this whole thing organized pretty much by himself?
Yeah, I think what happened was, you know, the guy kind of seemed to always have a big heart, which is kind of why he probably went on a working vacation into a third world country to try to help some people out. But, you know, when he heard that voice, you know, again, it did kind of drive him crazy. But then he actually did become a Christian man, and he really equates that to being the voice of God. But he just, you know, he didn't know what to do. He really didn't. And so when they developed this food, and it took him quite a while, he said, "Well, now how do I mass produce this food? I know how to make plastics. I know how manufacturing goes. But it's also very expensive." And so this youth group, the very first one, said, "Hey, we'll help you pack some food." And so they got together on a weekend and packed some food. And then they told other people about it, Boy Scout troop, and then another group, and then another group. And pretty soon he was packing 6-7 days a week at one location. And that's when the need started to grow of, I got to spread this thing out. And so that's how Kids Against Hunger was born.
We're talking with Tim Stromer, who's the director of Kids Against Hunger, by phone in his home in Minnesota. And this is a live call-in program, so listeners who have questions or comments or would like to share their experience involved in fighting world hunger, do give us a call. Anywhere the program is heard, you may punch in 1-800-222-9455. That's a toll-free number. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana area and it's a local call, you can reach our studio by punching in 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. Tim, when you first got involved with this, what kind of a structure did you find as you were at first volunteering with this organization?
What was kind of neat is it's a very, very simple process. I kind of described it earlier, just a kind of an assembly line put together. You know, what struck me was, the biggest thing that struck me was, is that, you know, one guy dreamed it, it happened, and it's so simple, and it's actually fun, but you really feel like you're actually finally doing something about starvation. Now, Richard didn't grow up with images of starving kids on TV all the time like we have now. So I've grown up with those images, and it leaves you futile. It's like, what do I do? How do I stop starvation? And with this process, you make so many meals in such a short amount of time that it really does feel like maybe it is possible to stop starvation. I know it sounds kind of idealistic, but we kind of believe it is possible.
And where does the food come from?
The food, the soy is made for us. It's all from the manufacturer. So we get the rice from the people who pack it. In fact, we get the rice from, you know, by the truckload, so we can buy it inexpensively. And then soy, the same thing. It's manufactured for us. And then 21 vitamins and minerals in the chicken is all manufactured for us by flavoring companies. And then the vegetables, too, we just buy from dehydrated vegetable companies. So we get everything from right from the sources, so it's fairly inexpensive to make.
And do they give you any special deals because of what you're doing?
The only thing they do, unfortunately, is give us good pricing on wholesale pricing. They do not give us incredible deals. But what I've noticed is there's two companies that have really come to bat for us and tried to actually hold down their pricing to give us the best price they possibly can. So as far as donating, you know, a truckload of soy or a truckload of rice, we haven't had a lot of that happen yet, unfortunately.
Now, Kids Against Hunger began in Minnesota, right?
It did.
And how far has it spread? You mentioned 17 different states. How does it get spread?
Well, it's basically kind of like what I did was I went up with the youth group and I asked Richard, I said, "Well, how do I bring this down to Mankato, which is only 60 miles south of Minneapolis?" And he said, "Let's do it." And within 2 months, we were actually packing food in Mankato. I've recently set up a satellite in, I should say help set up because we have a great team of people that work on it, set up in Wisconsin and another one in Indiana. So it really is a matter of just people finding out about it and then saying, I want to start a satellite. And we actually ship all the things that are needed to make the meals, including the ingredients themselves for 30,000 meals. And then we come and show you how to do it, and you're off and running.
And you mentioned the website was kidsagainsthunger.com. Can people go there to find out how to contact you if they would like to get involved?
Oh, they sure can. That's our main website for our main corporate headquarters in Minneapolis area. I'm at a division down in Mankato, Minnesota. So if someone needs to contact me, my information is also on that main website, kidsagainsthunger.com.
And that's Tim Stromer, S-T-R-O-M-E-R. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. How do the kids feel when they when they're doing this process? I can see kids around food stuff not being particularly careful in terms of sanitation and safety and things like that.
Well, it's kind of neat as they don a hairnet and an apron, and then they wash up real good, and then we kind of go through the process with them. And I don't know if it's because of what they're doing or who they're doing it for, but it seems to, for instance, this is two different examples. I had a kid come up to me not too long ago and say to me, this is the most important thing I've ever done in school, because we team up with schools a lot of times and do school-wide packaging. I had another 50-year-old come up to me the other day, and just he was actually weeping, and he said, this is the most important thing I've ever done in my life. So it seems to really impact a wide section of people. And there's been classes that have come in, and the teacher have had remarks of, these kids are never like this except when we come here. So I think it's a powerful way to not only feed people worldwide, but to impact the volunteers themselves, because they realize literally they could be saving lives by what they're doing.
Now, this is a nonprofit corporation, and people who make donations to it can help pay for the foodstuffs.
It is a 501c3, so yeah, every donation is greatly appreciated. As everybody knows, the cost of rice is going kind of crazy. It costs us about 23 cents a meal to make, which for a massively nutritious meal is pretty cheap, but it costs us roughly $89 a year to feed one kid for a whole year.
When you have these food packets ready to go, who decides where they go?
That's the hardest part. The reason why Richard so much wanted to expand the operation and get it into other locations is, you know, one location can only do so much unless it, you know, mechanizes and, you know, gets a lot bigger. And so we started opening the other satellites, but literally we turned down, you know, sometimes 20 or 30 organizations at a time that are requesting food just because we don't make enough food. So we literally need, you know, those donations, obviously, but also more people opening satellites in their areas and making more food, because there's a lot of great organizations out there. I just got back from Haiti, and there was one man who has over 700 different, you know, organizations, including churches, that could help him feed. He could feed another 150,000 people a day if we could just get him the food. I mean, it's literally, our problem is just getting more funds and or, you know, people packing the food.
How much of an issue is the cost of transportation?
Well, what's awesome about most of it is, you know, a lot of the transportation costs for us aren't too bad locally. As far as getting them to other countries, literally, mostly, that's usually taken up by the organizations receiving the food, because we try to get the food to them at little or no cost, but then they usually pay for the shipping because it's such a great deal to get the food to them. And sometimes we can hook up with government organizations and actually get that donated through our government or through our Navy, or sometimes the Air Force and Army help out too.
In terms of actually delivering it to a country that has a desperate need.
Right.
So you are tied in with other organizations that are also have the same concerns?
Dozens of organizations, some of them very large organizations, some of them smaller organizations, almost like a Mother Teresa mom and pop thing that starts up and just gets big, and they just have a heart for feeding kids, and we work with just some awesome organizations. So usually how it works is we work with one major organization in a certain area, and then they farm it out to other smaller locations, making sure that the kids actually do get the food.
Sometimes organizations that deliver food to those in need around the world are criticized because of choices that they make in terms of who gets it, because it has because of political decisions. Has that been a problem for you?
What's been awesome is in over 20 years of feeding kids, we've never lost a container load of food. Let me give you two examples real quick. Afghanistan broke out and the war broke out there, we had a lot of requests for foods, because what happens in a wartime situation is a lot of times refugee camps start forming and they have desperate needs for food, kind of like with storms right now that are raging around you guys. When there's an emergency situation, you try to respond the best you can. And when we sent food over there, they were going through the Khyber Pass. They had to get to the refugees. And literally, we went through there with two different trucks, 18-wheelers, with over almost 500,000 meals. Within hours after us passing, the next convoy was confiscated. It wasn't our food. It was some other humanitarian relief stuff. And then, you know, also in other war-torn countries, we've been able to sneak food in sometimes through different countries that don't allow American help. But, you know, most of the countries they ship to are just wide open doors, and we're able to get them through great organizations that work in that area. And just we can trust them. We've literally never lost a container load of food, so we've been very blessed that
way. Tim, I'm going to have to interrupt again. We do have another weather announcement.
An update on the weather situation from WILL now. A severe thunderstorm warning remains in effect until 5:45 for eastern Champaign County and for all of Vermilion County. The severe thunderstorm warning for southeast Iroquois County has been canceled at this time. Within the past few minutes, Weather Service meteorologists continued to monitor a line of severe thunderstorms capable of producing quarter-size hail and destructive winds in excess of 70 miles an hour. And these storms are located along a line that extends from about 14 miles to the southeast of Paxton to about 15 miles west of Danville, and then down 13 miles northeast of Tuscola. And this is moving to the east of 45 miles an hour. People in these locations are still threatened by the storm system. Rossville, Kickapoo State Park, Jamaica, Henning, Catlin, Hoopston, Danville, the Vermilion County Airport, Westville, Tilton, and Sidel. And this also includes a portion of Interstate 74 between mile markers 187 and 219. If you're in the path of this storm, prepare now for damaging winds, the possibility of destructive hail, and deadly cloud-to-ground lightning. If you're outside, you should move to a shelter, preferably inside a strong building, but away from windows. And again, this is a severe thunderstorm warning remaining in effect until 5:45 for Vermilion, all of Vermilion County, and eastern, far eastern Champaign County. And this storm has had a history of producing thunderstorm wind gusts in excess of 60 to 70 miles an hour in the Hoopston area. In the past 20 minutes, we've had a 67-mile-an-hour gust recorded just before 5 o'clock in Paxton, a thunderstorm wind gust that downed tree limbs and some power lines 80 miles an hour at one gust. And also in the Seymour area earlier, we had 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts, this at about 4:45, and some large tree limbs blown down. But right now, most of the storm is moving off to the east of the Champaign-Urbana area, so we'll see things dying down, at least for the time being, unless anything else fires up behind it. But people specifically in far eastern Champaign County and in Vermilion County are still threatened, and you should be in a place of safety at this time or moving to one rapidly. A reminder that a severe thunderstorm watch does remain in effect until 7 o'clock for all of the counties in our severe weather coverage area.
Daniel? Yes? Good afternoon, folks. This is meteorologist Dan Pounder in the weather office here at WILL. The latest on the severe thunderstorm watch and warnings. A severe thunderstorm warning is in effect for Champaign until 5:45 p.m. Edgar until 6 p.m., and Vermilion until 7 p.m. Also, a severe thunderstorm watch in effect until 7 p.m. for the entire WILL forecast area. This includes the counties Champaign, Christian, Clark, Coles, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Ford, Iroquois, Livingston, Logan, Macon, McLean, Moultrie, Piatt, Sangamon, Shelby, and Vermilion.
Thank you, Jay Pearson. Daniel, we're back with our guest on Keeping the Faith, Tim Stromer, who's safely ensconced, believe it or not, in a town called Good Thunder in Minnesota. Tim, why kids? When Richard Proudfit had this idea, why did he choose to have children involved in doing this?
You know, the greatest need, obviously, is among children worldwide, and children seem to suffer the most. And honestly, it tears at our hearts, I think, more when it's children. And, you know, what's sweet is kids in America want to do something. You know, when Katrina hit, when different disasters hit, you know, we respond. You know, the adults are usually the ones that do the majority of the work, and the kids obviously want to help. And this is one of those areas where kids can help save kids. And, I mean, if we can just ignite more and more of our kids in things like this, it seems to really build that kid. And we just, we even have some college kids that grow up with Kids Against Hunger, and then when they're in college, they want to do an internship at one of our centers, and that's just an awesome way of a child being able to give back and being able to bless other kids.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking with Tim Stromer, who's the director of Kids Against Hunger, an organization started 20 years ago by an industrialist, Richard Proudfit. His name is spelled Proudfit. That involves packing very nutritious meals inexpensively, using children and other groups here in the U.S. and other places to package these meals cost about 23 cents a meal, we've learned, and they get often delivered free to countries in need because of our government's help. Do you have any idea, Tim, how many people have been affected by this over the 20 years existence of Kids Against Hunger?
We know that it's well over 100 million meals that have been shipped and fed. Even yearly, we feed, you know, multiple millions, close to 30 million last year. Just out of one center, we can feed between 2 and 4 million, depending upon how busy they can get and their funding.
Now, you talked about these 40 different locations. Now, is each of those a center, or is a center something more?
A center, we literally call each of these that start up, they're called satellites. And
okay.
Each person or group is, some of them are rather small, some of them are rather large. Some may make, you know, 20 to 100,000 meals a year, and others may make into the 4 to 5 to 6 million meals a year.
Tell us what would be involved if someone would like to start such a satellite in their community.
Sure. What they do is they contact us, obviously. We can send them all the information, including it's basically a pamphlet that kind of walks you through the process. And, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, can you get or do you have access to some type of building or warehouse or something where you can pack these foods? My example was I started out in a mall space. This guy we used to lease from, I went to him and said, is there any way that you can donate some space to us to pack food for starving kids? And he was intrigued and literally gave us 3,000 square feet to start off with. We ended up expanding quite a bit, and then we outgrew that within a year. And another gentleman gave us over a 20,000 square foot building to use. So that's repeated nationwide. There's many, many groups that get buildings donated to them or space donated to them. So that's one of the big things, is you kind of have to have a bigger space and a team of people so you don't wear out, you know, the individuals doing it all. You know, we have a Rotary clubs in the Wisconsin area that just started one, and there's four different Rotary clubs that teamed up together, and they're going to do it. And we have some Kiwanis clubs that are looking at doing the same thing. So it really takes just a good team of people to come together and do it.
What's the minimum number of square feet you need to get started?
You know, that 3,000 to 5,000 square feet is real good minimum. That'll get you started at least. And then what's kind of neat is once it hits, the community starts to kind of find out about it, and they get behind it, and they really, really want to believe in it and help you. And sometimes you'll get different space based out of those, you know, experiences you'll have with those people and stuff too. So
to start up a satellite food packing organization, you need a building, you need a team of people. How much money do you need?
You know, it's about $8,000 for the starter kit and then all the food that we send with you too. But that's kind of deceiving because, you know, what happens is basically, depending upon how many people you have packing, you're going to go through a lot of rice and soy, a lot. And so what's kind of neat is if you can get those teams that come in and pack for you, can they do a fundraiser for you? Can they each bring in, you know, $20 a piece or something to help you buy some more rice and soy? So it's an ongoing thing. It's not something that's that's for the light of heart per se. It's something that really needs to be driven by people that really have a passion and the ability to long term go, I want to feed starving kids and I want to help do this and empower other people to do it. So it does take quite a bit. We have, just to give you a real quick example, we have some teams that go out and do mobile packagings, and we'll go into a high school or gymnasium and pack for a weekend or, you know, a whole day. And we could literally make 100,000 meals in one day pretty easy in that process.
Now, when you find a group that wants to do this, how do you monitor it? How do you, at Kids Against Hunger's central office, know that these satellites are doing what they should?
Well, basically, we have them sign a license agreement up front. We ask that they, you know, adhere to not changing the formula. We ask them to keep the high standard that Kids have tried to set forward. And in this license agreement that they sign, they basically agree to do it, you know, how we've always done it, and to basically let us know, okay, where are you shipping these meals? Are these meals really getting to the kids? We need pictures. We need evidences and proofs. And then once in a while, we'll actually get to travel to the countries and obviously to the satellites themselves. And just to make sure that everything is going okay. And, you know, some of our partners, our satellites, have been doing this a long time, and they're just very, very trustworthy people. So
now this program we're doing on broadcasting on Father's Day. Tell us a little bit about parents in relation to the kids who are doing this. What kind of stories and experiences have you had reports from parents?
Sure. One of the things that it actually makes me kind of sad is, I want to segue a little bit into this, but, you know, when I go to these countries where kids are starving, especially Haiti, there's a lot of fatherless kids out there, a lot. You know, we tend to think that war is political unrest, and all of those reasons we think starvation is so hard to stop, we tend to think that that's the majority when actually it's a minority. The World Food Program, the UN, and different ones cite that basically 95% plus of the starving people in this world basically just need food. It's a poverty issue. It's a poor issue. It's a cycle issue that needs to be broken, and it's not all of the reasons we think. And so there are so many orphans. There's so many street kids. There's so many kids without dads. And we have it so good here. I mean, I grew up in, you know, without a dad myself, and but I was so blessed because I had a mom who loved me. And when you're so poor that you would actually gladly give your kid away so that they can live, you know, with somebody else, and they'll be able to live and go on and be, you know, productive. I mean, it's sad. I mean, we, you know, I don't want to bring people down on Father's Day, but it's just it's kind of grabbed a hold of my heart too, because I have kids and I love them, and I just can't even imagine them starving. So it'd be really hard.
We're talking with Tim Stromer, director of Kids Against Hunger. If you'd like to learn more about this operation, if you have access to a computer, you can go online to kidsagainsthunger.com. Tim Stromer is located at in Minnesota, and his last name is spelled S-T-R-O-M-E-R. The originator of Kids Against Hunger is an industrialist, Richard Proudfit. I first learned about him through a doctor friend, a pediatrician who I was in high school with, and when we got together recently, his name is Robert Larson, and he was telling me about his experience learning about Kids Without Hunger. Do you have a method of getting the word out about the organization and your need for support and your need for more satellites to produce this food? Or is that something you just sort of count on word of mouth to get around?
Believe it or not, and thank you, Dr. Bob. I love that guy. He's a great guy. We have had such a windfall of people. You know, again, back to the example of just me going up and seeing a packaging. We had a congressman come into one of our centers, and he saw this packaging for the first time. And he's not even a congressman anymore, but the guy still sends us checks to support us. It's just, it's one of those things where you see it and you go, oh, we can do something. This is something that we can actually do. And I think it really impacts people. I think it impacts people so much that when they see a packaging going on, they want to do it. I have so many groups that come in, and they'll package for the 2 hours they signed up for, and they say, can we please stay longer, please? And that's unusual. I mean, you know, a service project is usually involving, say, raking leaves or, you know, cleaning out the gutters or, you know, something that's not always fun. But with this process, people get so fired up about it that, you know, I'm glad that we don't have to spend, you know, millions of dollars on TV ads like some organizations do. And I would hate to do that anyway because I would rather see the money go straight towards the kids, which is a much sweeter thing to me.
When, how old are your children?
My oldest is 21 and my youngest is just 2 years old.
And how do you tell them what you do?
Well, it's kind of funny because one of them I actually was on that youth group trip with up to Minneapolis and New Hope to my very first packaging. So she enjoyed it just as much as the other kids do. And sometimes my kids will go, can we go package food again? And so it's kind of sweet that they get it too, that it really ministers to them and it blesses them to give.
Now, you've mentioned Richard Proudfit is now himself a Christian. Do you have any limits on who can help or where food goes?
No, what's kind of nice about this organization is it's not a religious organization. It's a 501c3, just like, another 501c3.
Any charity,
any charity. And so even though a lot of us are Christians, I mean, just like we found that a lot of relief organizations have Christian origins or Christian base to them, we do not limit anybody, you know, upon their race or creed or doctrine or whatever. We just want to feed more kids. And so we love teaming up with people of different races and religions to do that.
And so food can go to countries that may be Hindu or Muslim or whatever.
Yep, most of the countries we send food to are not Christian nations. And, you know, even though a lot of, again, the relief organizations end up being Christian in nature, not all of the organizations we feed through are technically Christian organizations.
Let me take just a moment, since we're a little bit past halfway through our program, and mention that coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, Bill Plaker will be our guest, P-L-A-C-H-E-R. Professor Plaker is from Wabash College. We'll be talking with him about post-liberal Christian theology. On the following Sunday, June 29th, our guest will be Esther Patt. We'll be talking with her about the joy of social ethics and politics. On July 6th, our guest will be a Hindu Swami, leader of a monastery, talking about a Hindu temple being built here in the Champaign-Urbana area. Those are some of our guests coming up on Keeping the Faith on the weeks ahead. I remind listeners, this is a live call-in show, and we're eager to have you participate. Do give us a call if you have a comment or a question for our guest. Today, our guest is Tim Stromer, And if you have a comment or question about the program he's talking about, Kids Against Hunger, do give us a call in Champaign-Urbana. Local numbers is 333-9455. Elsewhere, wherever the program is heard, including on the Internet, you may call us toll-free 1-800-222-9455. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I'm the director for just another couple months of the University YMCA before I retire. This Y does not have a pool or a gym or a fitness center. It's a Y on a campus here at the University of Illinois that helps students get involved in service projects, such as tutoring, such as Engineers Without Borders, Amnesty International. We have many 12 different programs that students are involved with. We also have some programs open to the public in the Champaign-Urbana area. Communiversity is one of our non-credit, no-exam kind of courses that we offer three times a year. And this summer, they'll be starting up tomorrow. We have courses in ballroom dance taught by Aurora Villacorta, Miss V. We have courses in martial arts, karate for kids, beginning karate for adults. We have courses on well-being and the healing arts. We have one course on business, negotiation, professional secrets to getting better deals done every time. We have a course on rug braiding and one that I'll be teaching on C.S. Lewis, I'm calling Christianity and Imagination. We'll be talking about some of his writings, fantasy novels, Narnia books, and so on. All of these courses are very inexpensive, really just a token charge. So if you'd like to find more about them, do call the Y, 337-1500, or check out the course catalog for Communiversity on our website, which is universityymca.org. Well, let's get back to our guest here on Keeping the Faith today, Tim Stromer. And we do have a caller on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Thank you so much. I wanted to say one thing. I used to call in here a lot, but I'm having health problems. I just want to say that hunger is not immune. I'm very thankful there for this program. I won't keep talking. Thanks so much.
Jan, thank you for that. We do have to go to another weather warning.
And from WILL, an update on the weather situation. The severe thunderstorm warning in eastern Champaign County was canceled, but remains in effect for another couple of minutes, and that is for Vermilion County, for the Ridge Farm and Georgetown areas particularly. The severe thunderstorm warning remains in effect until 6 o'clock in northern Edgar County. A severe thunderstorm capable of producing quarter-size hail and damaging winds in excess of 60 miles an hour was located near Chrisman and moving to the east at 39 miles an hour. So you'll want to keep an eye on that storm. A lot of the rest of the activity has been dying down in the past half hour, or moving, I should say, probably more accurately east into Indiana, where storms do continue to be a threat. There is still some rain from about Kankakee southward to Champaign-Urbana, east of Champaign-Urbana, and then toward the south. But the only warning that will be in effect in a couple of minutes will probably be the one that's for northern Edgar County in the Chrisman area. That's the area currently threatened by that storm. Parts of Vermilion County, the eastern part of Vermilion County, still technically under a severe thunderstorm warning at this point. And a reminder that the severe thunderstorm watch remains in effect for all of the WILL severe weather coverage area until 7 o'clock this evening, and that means conditions will still be favorable for the development of severe thunderstorms in and around the watch area. And the severe thunderstorm warning for southeastern Vermilion County now officially from the Weather Service expiring at 5:45 as the severe thunderstorm that had prompted that warning had moved out of the area. So the warning allowed to expire. So the only warning in effect right now is for northern Edgar County, the storm threatening the Chrisman area right now. But again, a severe thunderstorm watch will continue until 7 o'clock this evening. And so we'll continue to monitor the situation, and you should be keeping an eye out should severe weather pop up and move into your area. You want to be in a situation that you can respond to quickly. A flood warning for urban areas and small streams does remain in effect for eastern Clark County and will do so until 9:15 on Tuesday morning.
We're back with Keeping the Faith. Thank you for that report, Jay Pierce. And thank you for the phone call. This was a regular caller here, and Jan is a retired nurse, and she herself is in, has been in ill health. But appreciate very much her calling and encouraging the work of Kids Against Hunger. We're talking on the phone with the director of that charity in Minnesota, Tim Stromer. Tim, are you still there? Tim, can you hear me? Okay. Tim, are you there?
I am here.
Ah, great. Good. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the things that people would encounter if they come to one of these places where the packaging is going on. What's it look like?
You know, it's funny because it kind of takes on a different location depending upon where you're at. In Indianapolis area, and actually in Carmel, Indiana, they meet in a Red Cross building. And then we have a satellite that is in Detroit area, Plymouth, Michigan. We have that in basically it's kind of like a mobile packaging where a lot of times he'll go into schools. So it really, in Mankato, we have kind of an old plumbing supply building that we fixed up and renovated. Norfolk, Nebraska has a space in the Orphan Grain Train building where they package. So kind of depends upon where you're at. I even heard of one principal who started a Kids Against Hunger in his principal's office so that whenever somebody was naughty, they could come and package food right in his office.
That's creative. Now you talked earlier about the kids and other volunteers would be given a hairnet and an apron, and they would need to wash up, of course, to keep everything sanitary. But what does when they get all this rice and all these beans and all this the soy, what's it in? Boxes, bags?
The rice is flying. The rice comes in 50-pound bags, and then the soy comes in 50-pound bags. Sometimes we get the soy into big, huge cardboard totes. The veggies come, they're dehydrated vegetables that come in boxes. Sometimes we get them in bags. So they're just kind of in bulk form, and then they get poured into the tubs, and then each ingredient requires a different amount, per se. And so one ingredient, like the chicken, will have a spoon, and then the other ingredient, like rice, will have a cup, and you scoop the rice into.
And you said there's a big funnel. Tell us about what does that do?
Well, the funnel is actually made by Richard, one of his plastics companies. And the funnel is basically on a stand, and then you put the empty bag underneath the funnel, and then the ingredients are scooped into the funnel, which obviously then the bag catches, and then once the ingredients are scooped in there, then the bag moves down the assembly line all by hand and is then weighed to make sure that we don't cheat the starving kids because that'd be bad. And then a little bit of rice is added or taken away if the bag's not the correct weight. And then it's sealed, and then they're laid out onto a table, and then once there's 36 bags, they get set into a box, and then the box gets taped up. Then the box is labeled, and it's stamped the date of the packaging date, and then 3 years later when it expires. And then that box is set on a pallet, and then once there's 33 boxes in that pallet, then we get that pallet shrunk-wrapped. And then we get the pallet moved, and then a new pallet set in its place. And then once we get 40 pallets, which is actually 285,120 meals, then those meals will hopefully ship out and we'll get it to the starving kids.
And I missed, how much does one of those original bags weigh?
You bet. It's a little over a pound. It has 6 1-cup servings in it.
And how many meals will that be?
That'd be 6 meals.
6 meals. Yeah. Wow.
Very, very powerful food. It's just still amazing to me what little bit of food can do if you eat the right kind of food.
And when someone gets this package, it's delivered to a place where there's great need. What do they have to do to make it edible?
It's basically usually cooked by one of our agents. It's even says right on the bag itself that you need to boil it, the water, for 20 minutes to get rid of a lot of the impurities. And our agents do a great job of that. They usually use fresh water anyway because that's one of the greatest needs in different countries is water. And so once the water's boiled, then they put the ingredients into usually larger pots. So they open multiple bags and do large feedings at schools or orphanages or, you know, sometimes just city feedings in the streets.
How does it taste?
It actually tastes really good. I'm amazed at actually that it tastes good at all because it's so nutritious. You would think, oh, this can't taste good. It tastes like a cross between rice-a-roni and ramen.
And what does it look like after it's been boiled and prepared?
It kind of looks like a rice casserole.
Okay.
Or a rice hot dish if you're in Minnesota.
Do you have any locations in Illinois?
We do not actually yet have a location in Illinois. There are some people working on that in Illinois.
Do you know in what cities?
I do not. I know there's an area near Chicago where some people are looking at getting a satellite started.
And let me repeat the information of where people can get. Well, why don't you tell us again your website?
It's kidsagainsthunger.com.
All right. When someone calls you up, what's your next step?
Our next step is to basically answer any questions they have to see if we can help them with possible location, to see if we have any contacts in that area already who may be working on satellite. We've actually had that happen where we've had multiple people from an area call us, and then we kind of try to team them up together to see if they can work together and produce a satellite. Sometimes we'll get 2 satellites in the same area, which is fine. In larger metropolitan areas, sometimes we can have 4 or 5 satellites in the same area just because, you know, there's that many people that want to help package food.
And I take it people who would like to do a service project, for example, college students who might want to do this over spring break or fall break, that's possible too if they wanted to come to one of the satellites in Indiana or Minnesota or Michigan or wherever?
Road trip, it definitely is. It's a lot better way to spend your time and money, probably feeding starving kids than maybe in Florida or some other spring break area.
Do you have many college students who have done this?
We have had a lot of college students. We've even had entire Greek sororities do a kind of a marathon packaging where they'll come and do it for hours on end and kind of make a pledge drive and very, very neat, cool packaging.
What other interesting groups have you had show up to help?
One of my favorites, and we have 2 retirees now at our facility in Mankato that are actually working 20 hours a week, and they're retirees. Their favorite groups, and one of my favorite groups, is retiree groups. I had this one lady call me up, and she was over 70, and she said, we would like to come and help, but, we're getting older, and we're not sure how long we can stand, and we just don't know if we can help at all. Do you mind if we just come in and try? And I said, oh, sure, you can work for 5 minutes if you want to. That's fine. And so they came in, and literally within minutes were giggling like schoolgirls. It was just such a sweet, sweet example. And that group, actually, we've had 2 retiree groups. One of them, there's 3 90-year-olds in the group, and they average almost 300 meals per hour per person that they make. So we love those groups.
Now, 50-pound bags of rice or soy are not light. How do you deal with those?
Well, we lift those into the tubs for the people. So then the people are literally just scooping the smaller you know, ingredients into the bags. And then we also, with every group that can, we try to ask for help that way too, just so our volunteers aren't wearing themselves out too.
People who want to check out charities often don't know how to do that, as to find out how legitimate it is, whether to send the money or give their time. How may people learn more about Kids Against Hunger?
Sure. I think, you know, the best thing is do your homework. There's lots of web searches and engines you can find out. But if you're near a location, I would really invite you into that location and sit down with that satellite director or the person volunteers at the satellite and check it out. The biggest thing is if you can do it, go and watch a packaging, whether it's a Boy Scout troop or a retirees or whatever it is, college age group. It's just, it's a very sweet thing to see. And what's neat is, if you want to donate, you can see where your funds are going directly. You can see the meals being made. That's what I invite people to do. It's just, it's a very worthwhile thing to look at.
We're down to our last 60 seconds or so. Any last thoughts on what you'd like people to know about Kids Against Hunger?
You know, what's funny is, I don't think most people 10 and above believe that it's possible to stop starvation. I really don't, because every group I ask, they just don't raise their hands. They don't think it's possible because of what we've been told, because of what we believe. But what's funny is every group that come in that are 10 and under, when I ask the question of this group, do you believe it's possible to stop starvation worldwide, almost every kid that's 10 and under will raise their hand and say, you bet. I think that the problem is there's just not enough of us working on it. If we all decided tomorrow that starvation was going to end, we could do it within a year. It's just there's not enough of us working together to stop this problem, and I believe it's totally possible.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith has been Tim Stromer, who is the director of Kids Against Hunger. For more information, go to kidsagainsthunger.com on your computer. For people who may not have computer access, Tim, could you tell us a mailing address or a phone number?
You bet. Best way to get hold of the corporate office is 763-257-0202, or they can mail us a letter at 5401 Boone Avenue North, and that's in New Hope, Minnesota, MN, 55428.
New Hope, Minnesota, 55428, 5401 Boone Avenue, or phone 763-257-0202. For Kids Against Hunger. I'm Steve Shoemaker, a host of Keeping the Faith. Next week we'll be talking with Bill Plaker, a professor at Wabash College, about his most recent book, The Triune God, an exercise in post-liberal Christian theology, Christian thinking. Esther Patt will be our guest on June 29th, talking about the joy of social ethics and politics. A Hindu Swami will be our guest on July 6th, talking about a new Hindu temple being constructed in North Champaign. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. Remember to call in the University Y if you want to learn about Communiversity. Thank you for listening.
And you're listening to WILL Urbana. We're the broadcasting service for the College of Media at Illinois. We have an update on the weather situation now. A new severe thunderstorm warning, this one in effect for southern Coles County, for Cumberland County, for Clark County, and for southern Edgar County. And this is in effect until 6:45. This is a new warning, and it's the only one in effect right now in our severe weather coverage area. Again, it's for southeastern Coles, for Cumberland County, Clark County, and for southern Edgar County. National Weather Service meteorologists are monitoring a line of severe thunderstorms capable of producing nickel-size hail and damaging winds in excess of 60 miles an hour. These storms are located along a line from 4 miles northwest of Paris to 9 miles northeast of Toledo, and this line is moving to the southeast at 40 miles an hour. Hazeldell, Clarksville, Casey, Vermilion, Oliver, Martinsville, Marshall, and Denison are in its path. If you're in the path of this storm, you should prepare for damaging winds, large hail, and deadly cloud-to-ground lightning. If you're outside, you should move to a shelter, preferably inside a strong building, but stay away from windows. We remain under a severe thunderstorm watch in all of our Severe weather coverage area till 7 o'clock this evening. Isolated showers and thunderstorms will continue to occur west of I-57 through sunset, and a line of strong to severe thunderstorms will affect areas from I-57 to the east through about 7:30. And as we are looking right now, this line of severe thunderstorms is from about Paris to Effingham and all the way down to Flora. And it's moving to the Wabash River area until about 7 o'clock. But the strongest storms between now and 7 o'clock, when this watch is set to expire, will probably be affecting Edgar.